All right, hey, welcome back. Tech Lead here. Now, I know this isn't a relationship channel, or at least I don't advertise it as one, but after my divorce about 2 years ago, I've had some time to reflect on that experience, and I came up with a number of key insights and learnings that I think are going to be really valuable for you, and I wanted to share them in the hopes to save you some grief or struggles in your love life as well. You know, while our relationships begin with the highest expectations, and I don't think anybody ever wants to get divorced, half of all marriages do end up badly, and oftentimes if you're the man, for example, you're not going to be the one initiating it. 90% of all divorces are initiated by women. And so that takes us to our first point, which is to keep your exits open, because there's a good chance you're going to need to take it. You don't want to be stuck in a burning house where you've blocked your own exits. Now, there's a number of ways to do this financially. For example, you could get a prenuptial agreement or even a postnup agreement, which is, I think, absolutely essential for millionaires, such as myself. And the reason is family law is pretty crazy when you come to understand it. So just for example, let's assume you're a man working as a software engineer, pretty high paying job, and then you marry a waitress. And let's say she quits and becomes a full-time housewife, and you support her for 10 years in a relationship, at the end of which she either just implodes due to, say, narcissism, or maybe she finds another guy, cheats on you. It doesn't really matter why. But in either case, you would be expected to support her current lifestyle for half the duration of the marriage. Although in this case, since it's over 10 years, it would be potentially for the rest of her life, in which you give her half of your income. You couldn't even say quit your job or retire, even if you're able to, because you would be forced to work at your maximum capacity. And it's actually not all about money. Guarding your exits also helps you maintain leverage in a relationship. Now, I know how this sounds. Holding leverage sounds mean and unromantic, but it turns out that leverage also helps hold people accountable. You know, I'm always careful when I date people because I know that my status as a millionaire means that it really disturbs other people's ways of life. They lose purpose in their life when they meet me, because then they realize that nothing they ever did really matter and nothing they do in the future will matter in a financial sense. Some people are able to handle that. Some people lose control of their own lives and start just destroying everything they can to see if they can make some type of impact. And that's probably because nothing matters. Like, if I told you you were invincible, you would probably jump off a cliff or get into a car accident just to see if it hurts. And the funny thing is, when you stop to think about it, a marriage is a very strange type of relationship where you have absolutely no leverage on another person. You cannot check them. So another person can suddenly decide they're going to just go out of control. They can get fat, overeat, sleep in all day, quit their jobs, just totally destroy their own lives, and yet you would have to be there to back them up and support them. And so what happens is that after a few years, one person finally realizes that they can do whatever they want. There's absolutely no repercussions, no punishments for any type of poor behavior that they may exhibit because somebody else is there to support them with half of their income in no matter what type of situation, they're being backed up by another person. And generally, we have no-fault divorce, so it doesn't really matter why a relationship ends. You're still expected to support the other person. So if you're thinking that at the end you go on stage in front of a judge and jury and you're able to air your grievances and proclaim the injustices or the reasons why this other person was not a good partner, that's not how it is. Nobody wants to or cares to listen to any of your relationship problems. Which brings us to our second point, which is to keep your finances separate, I would say. You know, I remember when I was bidding on the house, the real estate agent recommended that I hold the house in my own name. And I always wondered why, but now I see the reason why. I don't want to get kicked out of my own house. And generally in a divorce, it's very messy. It's pure chaos. And people just grab whatever they want. If you have a joint bank account, it's not uncommon for one partner to just drain the joint bank account and take all the money out. And you may be thinking they can't do that. And you're right. It's not legal. It's not right. It's not fair. But the thing is, most divorces do not end in a legal battle. They don't go to trial. Most of them settle in mediation. And so it's kind of a free-for-all where people just grab whatever they can. And at the end, they just privately agree to settle, or rather, things get kind of left unsettled and people just continue on with their lives however best they can. Quick pause. Now, to truly manage your finances and set up a separate brokerage account just for yourself, you may want to open up a new account with Webull, where you will get 2 free stocks just for signing up. So that's free money right there. And I can personally vouch for Webull because I use it for a lot of my own stocks, investments, and trading bitcoins. So there will be a link in the description below for your 2 free stocks. Highly recommend it. Check them out. Now, the third tip that I have here is that your actions should reflect the financial situation of your life. And so what I mean by this is that if you have tied yourself to another person, your hopes, your dreams, your financial stability, wouldn't you expect there to then be some trust and transparency between you and the other person? So I know how this is going to sound, but I would say that if I were to get into another marriage, then I would expect full access to the other person's social media accounts, their emails, their Instagram messages, their Facebook private messages, because all of this can potentially threaten me. It can affect me. And I know this is probably inconceivable in today's day and age, but if you're to take a look at my parents, for example, there's just so much trust between them. Like, they share everything. They can access each other's emails, each other's devices. They know the passwords to each other's accounts, and there's just no secrets between them. And I think that is a truly trustful relationship. And, you know, for the people who are not willing to share everything and share their digital lives, I think that's cool too. That's totally okay. But I would just take marriage off of the table too at that point. Now, after my divorce, there was one thing that became very clear to me, which is that desire cannot be negotiated. So this was a tidbit I learned in the book, The Rational Male by Rollo Tomasi. Excellent one, you might want to check that one out. But it comes from the fundamental idea that simply living out your daily life and supporting one another and being a good partner and just maintaining the household, doing your chores, doing your tasks and cleaning the place and going to work and just making sure everybody's living a really great life is just not enough. You know, at that point, it's almost like marrying a piece of Pottery Barn furniture, and there's no romance in that. So no matter how much money, wealth, or status you make, how much teamwork or compromise or communication you share with another person, or how many dishes you might help wash, how many restaurants you take the person to, how many pieces of jewelry you buy, none of that matters because none of it generates desire. You have to generate the desire. And so for this one, you know, I think I'm gonna take the blame for it. I probably did neglect it. I spent too much time working and then playing some video games in the evenings and weekends, and I probably could have spent more quality time. Now, the next tip I have here is to ignore the other person's looks for a little bit. Like, I like to imagine the other person as this really fat, obese, unattractive, ugly guy. And you just take a look at the other person's personality and their attitude and think if you would enjoy being in this person's company. And of course, this is assuming you haven't married yet. And the reason is oftentimes a person's external appearances can blind you to all of the red flags that can be going off in your head. And we tend to project onto the other person higher expectations of what we want them to be, only to be disillusioned later on. And so for both sides, you have to like the other person for who they are right now, not who they maybe in the future one day after you've changed them. And when somebody shows you who they are, then you need to believe them the first time, as Maya Angelou once said. One thing you might do is to observe a person's relationship with their parents, their friends, their family. You know, I think that's one reason to always be careful about people who don't have good relationships with their parents. Me, I got great relationships with my parents. I live with them. Because people who treat their own family poorly, well, you're going to be that family and they're going to treat you poorly too. And for example, I remember one time I was out with my ex-wife and we felt we had gotten ripped off by a hotel. And so my ex-wife was raging at this clerk and totally disrespecting him, just yelling all over the place. And at the time, I almost thought this was a positive quality, seeing how fierce and aggressive she was, only to find later on this aggression would be turned onto me as well. And it was totally unreasonable. Now, tip number 7 is to consider geography. And I know that when people are in their 20s, they feel like they can travel anywhere they want to, and it sounds great. But as your parents start getting older, maybe they get sick and you realize there's not much time left, then I think people have a yearning to go back home so they can spend more time with their family, their friends, their pets. Or hey, maybe there's a kid involved and then people want to raise their own child in their hometown with their local culture, their local customs, in this ideal that they always had in their mind. And so as silly as it is, I think a lot of people don't even consider geography or where they're going to live when they get married, or at least later on, paths can certainly diverge. And then my 7th and final tip is to take the higher road. You know, ideally try to leave the other person in a better state than you found them if you can, although that can be difficult. But at least for myself, I know I faced a lot of internal struggles getting through the resentment, bitterness, hatred, or negativity involved in my own divorce. And I think that would just be giving this event way too much credit to let it affect you in such a negative manner. So I was reading Reddit the other day and someone mentioned that a divorce or breakup is actually a happy ending to a relationship compared to having two people stuck in some miserable marriage. And so if you ever go through some experience like this, which I hope you don't, but if you do, just know that It's probably not that uncommon, actually. In fact, it happens to a lot of people. And there's actually some silver linings too. Like, I have had more mental peace and tranquility in my life in the past 2 years than I've had in a long time, which is saying a lot. Not to mention I can play my video games too after I finish this video. So that'll do for me, but let me know what are your tips on marriage. Post them in the comments below. I'll see you there. If you liked the video, please give a like and subscribe, and I'll see you in the next one. Thanks, bye.